7,000.
At last, the Constitution is finished. But if a super-duper big tragedy happens, this entire document goes out the window. Said no founding father ever. The Kate Daly Show starts now.
Our forebears came not for gold, but mainly in search of God and the freedom to worship in their own way. We've been a free people living under the law with faith in our Maker and in our future. I've said before that the most sublime picture in American history is of George Washington on his knees in the snow at Valley Forge. That image personifies a people who know that it's not enough to depend on our own courage and goodness. We must also seek help from God, our Father and Preserver.
Well, thank you, Ronald Reagan, for that. That was great. You know, can you imagine getting to just be a fly on the wall during that time? Happy Constitution Day to you. And I hope that this is celebrated around the country. It should be. I wonder how many people know a lot about the Constitution. I'm going to guess that a lot don't. It reminds me of that clip I play all the time where the girl talked about how all this racism was in the Constitution. And Charlie Kirk says, well, where is it? And she couldn't answer him because she hadn't read it. She was full of accusations. She had just never read it. And he said, it's not in there. It's not in there. And I'm listening to Ronald Reagan's words about the founders and, you know, they haven't gotten a very, very nice shake as far as how we're trying to paint them in history. And so in today's show, welcome to the Kate Daly Show, by the way. I've got Uncle Milty here. How are you?
I'm good. I wish more people were interested in Constitution Day, but I understand how people can drift away from the Constitution. After all, it is a 17-page document.
We long for 17-page documents in Congress. Oh, boy. We've drifted off pretty far. And, you know, it's so hard because, you know, Uncle Milty and I were just talking about, before this show started today, about bully groups and intimidation groups. You know, you got the LGBTQ groups trying to change education, trying to change legislation, trying the political action groups is what they've turned into. And I look at all the groups around the country, the manipulation on the freedom of speech. Freedom of speech is fine as long as I'm not offended, you know, that kind of thing. And a lot of people stand on very, very neutral ground. It's kind of like I'm standing over here on neutral ground giving you the ability to say what you want to say even though I don't agree with you. Even though I don't agree with you. And isn't that the beauty of America? Is that I can stand over here and my love for you extends to the point where I can say what you want. I don't love what you're saying. I don't like what you're about. But I acknowledge that I respect you enough, fellow citizen, to say what you want to say. And I'm not over there bullying and intimidating. And I'm not saying, well, if you were a real good human being, you'd believe is like I do, you know, or like the LGBT crowd. If you knew what love was, you'd love us and you'd love our cause. But obviously you can't love unless you're, because that's the new litmus test, you know, unless you're on board with these groups. And I look at all the manipulation going on. And I think that that's a sad state. I think that's the kind of sad state that we're in as far as the PC crowd goes. But I do want to talk about the Constitution today, and I want to talk about it in terms of maybe learning something entirely new about it. And I also want to talk about where we were as a country, too, because we've drifted so far away from that. You know, what the founders always talked about and what they were concerned about. And then in these days, you can't even bring up the stuff that they brought up. You can't do it. It's not PC. It's not politically correct.
Yeah.
Isn't that sad?
And before anybody gets too confused, the actual original parchment Constitution was only 4 pages of parchment. Mm-hmm. But a modern day version,
to read it. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and then we don't read it. We don't understand it.
But it's very difficult to understand.
It's not written
in
Mandarin.
Extremely simple English, you know.
Yeah, that's, don't infringe on the Second Amendment. I don't know. It's pretty plain.
Yeah,
it's
only if you know what infringe means.
It is pretty amazing to see how far we've drifted. And so we'll talk about that a little bit. We'll take your phone calls. We actually have a lot to talk about. In the way of free speech, you know, there were some high school cheerleaders that were actually penalized for standing there with a Trump banner. And I thought, wow, that's really sad. That's really, really sad that we're at a place now where that is this comes by way of the New American. The high school cheerleaders were disciplined for posing with a Trump banner. He's the president of the United States.
That's all.
But you can't have a banner and stand there with him and take a photo. That's offensive to somebody in the crowd. And so they found themselves in hot water after doing that. You know, whether you believe in Trump or not, he's still the president of the United States.
Yeah.
To stand by a banner and take a picture of that and to be disciplined for that, this was in North Carolina, by the way, that's a sad state of affairs in squashing these students' right to the freedom of speech. To take a freedom of photo, should we say.
And the guy that was offended by the banner of the President of the United States was wearing a Che Guevara t-shirt.
It just so happened. I wouldn't be surprised in this day and age. And so these cheerleaders from North Stanley High School were placed on probation even, adding that the governing body had not defined the terms of their probation. See, they couldn't decide what to do with this group of cheerleaders that stood by a Trump 2020 sign. And then the team is expected to continue cheering, but the school district doesn't quite know what to do with them. How do we teach these girls? As you know, they're supposed to be teaching the Constitution, but instead of that, how do we teach these girls they can't say something that's not politically correct because one in the crowd might not like it? Or maybe five in the crowd might not like it. You know, there were elementary schools singing Obama songs. They were instructed to sing Obama songs.
Remember that?
At the events that the schools had, and people didn't have a problem with that. But he was president of the United States. They wanted to teach this very ridiculous song to these kids, and these kids had to recite the song. Yet you're not allowed to stand next to your Trump banner if you like Trump? When did this happen?
Well, it's because they were in uniform and acting as representatives of the school. So displaying a sign...
Oh, I thought the teachers were acting as representatives of the school when they taught the Obama song and then used it as representation in their little assemblies.
Yeah,
that was actually really representative of the school, was it not? In fact, that was the school teaching them to sing a song about Obama.
Yeah, yeah.
I was offended at that. But you didn't see me down there calling, and I was silently offended at that. And I said, okay, well, you know, I don't think it's right for the schools to do that. But, hey, you know, we live in America. If kids want to sing a song like that, I guess they can. Why can't they let those cheerleaders do the same thing?
But in 2016, it was okay for teachers to tell students that if your parents vote for Trump, there's something wrong with them.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty bad. And so, you know, as we talk about this today, it just reminds me about how important this is that we talk about this in so many ways to remind people that it's the freedom. That's how you respect one another. If you want to talk about a nation coming together, it's not because you have to jump on board the LGBT train or embrace what they're doing or whatever group it is that's trying to, you know, to bully you into making them a part of the group. It's the fact that you respect each other by just respecting each other's freedom. That is not a hard thing to do. And that's what brings a nation together. That's what brings us all together. Not everybody jumping on a political action group.
A person who was asked what their favorite part of the Constitution was said, "My favorite part is the First Amendment, even though it can be abused." Just the
freedom
fact that you can say that means you don't understand it.
Yeah, it means you don't understand the very thing that we're talking about, and that is it's the very freedom to stand there and say, okay, I support that you that you feel this way or you feel that way. And
here's how I feel.
And here's how I feel. This is John Stossel. This is John Stossel, man on the street.
Today is Constitution Day. So what's your favorite part of the Constitution?
I'm not sure what it's actually about, yeah.
You get to do whatever you want to do. I don't know. I have no idea.
Lots of people had no idea. But some knew, and many had favorite parts.
The ability to amend it.
That was key. It allowed Americans to get rid of the bad parts. The 13th Amendment outlawed slavery. The 21st ended alcohol prohibition. Other important parts are the right of the people to bear arms, a guarantee of trial by jury, and lots of people mentioned the First Amendment.
Free speech.
Freedom of speech, even though it can be abused.
I'm a firm believer in saying what I want to say, and I would hate for somebody to restrict me.
I ask a bunch of freedom-loving people.
You have a favorite part of the Constitution?
They're the First Amendment.
Jim Caruso runs a craft beer brewery. Why the First Amendment?
If you don't have the ability to express what you truly own, your thoughts and ideas, you don't have any of the above.
Libertarian Party Chair Nick Sarwak says his favorite part is the whole Bill of Rights.
The rights of the individual, the right to free speech, the right to keep and bear arms, the limitations on the powers of government.
Congressman Thomas Massie says his favorite part is the Ninth Amendment.
It says just because we have listed some of your rights here in the Bill of Rights and in the Constitution, that's not an exhaustive list. It says that all of the rights are yours.
Congressman Justin Amash says his favorite part is
the Equal Protection Clause. You can't pass laws that don't apply equally to everyone.
Senator Mike Lee chose the 10th Amendment, which gives most government power to the states or the people. States do stupid things, too.
Sure they do. But the difference is, with a state, you can turn around a lot faster.
Charles Kirk, who heads a student group that fights against big government, also picked
the 10th Amendment, because I think it shows the humility of the founders, where they said, we didn't get it all right here. What amazing humility for the founders to put that in.
It's a remarkable document. I hate the archaic way parts of it are written, but heck, it's still mostly working 230 years later. It's a reason we should celebrate today, Constitution Day.
What'd you think of that?
Amen.
You know, Constitution Day, the document, the law of the land, that seems like if you cite anymore, it seems outdated to people. Oh, you're one of those Constitution people. Yeah, we're not that strict. We're kind of loose. No, actually, it's still the law of the land. I'm grateful for that, truly grateful for that. And we need to talk about it a little bit more and have it part of our conversation. Our kids don't even know what it says. Sad. Be right back on the Kate Daly Show. Don't go anywhere.
Balance of nature, changing the world one life at a time.
I'm loving it so much, and I'm so happy that I'm just a member of that, because I just pop the pills and forget about everything else. I really am enjoying them, and I'm so glad that I've never met Dr. Howard, and it's fine. But I just tell him that I'm just loving it, and I couldn't agree more with him. It is working spectacularly for me. Couldn't be better, and I couldn't be more pleased.
Experience the balance of nature difference for yourself. Receive 25% off your first preferred purchase of Balance of Nature. Plus, get a set of convenient travel bottles containing a free additional week's supply of Balance of Nature's fruits and veggies. With these discounts, you will still receive free shipping on every order. Call 800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code KATE.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Oh, beautiful. Dark heroes blue. In liberating strife. Who more than self country love. I'm saying about tonight is this America, sweet America.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Kate Daly Show. So glad you are, too. You can go to katedalyradio.com. You can find us on The Kate Daly Show on Facebook, The Kate Daly Show on Twitter, of course. And make sure you get over to the website, Balance of Nature. Balance of Nature is the product that I take, and it is a supplement that is fantastic to get your fruits and vegetables and to help your immune system, regulate your sugar. In the drink, it also comes with, there's also turmeric and all kinds of wonderful natural things in it to help your body get back to what it once was or what it should be if it never was there for you. Make sure that you're getting your health in line right now. Make sure that you are concerned about it because you're not getting enough vitamins from our food supply. And we've done a lot of shows on that. And let me tell you, it scares me what we're doing to our food supply. Make sure that you are getting that supplement. And you can get 25% off right now by putting in the code KATE, K-A-T-E, K-A-T-E. And make sure that you're doing that at Balance of Nature when you order. That way you get that extra savings. It's already affordable. Now you get extra savings. But try it out and see how you feel. It gave me energy. Within about a week, I was feeling like, wow, what am I doing that's causing all this? And my husband felt the same way. So make sure that you are taking that. It's fantastic. A couple of things. We've been talking a little bit about the Constitution. And you know, we were just talking about those cheerleaders penalized, right? For freedom of speech, standing and taking a photo with a Trump banner. I mean, how dare they? He's only the president of our country.
Mm-hmm.
How dare they do that? And then John Stossel did a Man on the Street about the Constitution. It was interesting how many people didn't know.
Yeah.
Haven't read it. Sad. It's sad. Let me say this. I thought this was great. And this was a piece about, let me tell you. I'm going to quote somebody, then I'll tell you who it was. This is what he said. After weeks of fruitless effort, the oldest delegate rose, addressing the chairman. He said, "The small progress we have made after 4 or 5 weeks is melancholy proof of the imperfections of human understanding. I have lived, sir, a long time, and the longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of this truth, that God governs the affairs of man." Citing the Bible, he added, "And if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, is it probable that an empire can rise without his aid? We have been assured, sir, in the sacred writings that except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. I firmly believe this, and I also believe that without his concurring aid, we shall succeed in political building no better than the builders of Babel." The speaker? Benjamin Franklin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, they spoke like this a lot. And we don't think about that because we've become so PC'd since the 50s. We don't realize that this was an everyday conversation. Because even me saying this on the radio right now, for the whole world to hear, oh, my gosh, she's talking about God on the radio. Yeah, because the founders talked about him all the time.
Yep.
And we need to understand that that's how it came about. On this day, 1787, delegates to the Constitutional Convention signed the Constitution. Benjamin Franklin had been spotted by a Philadelphia matron as he emerged from that meeting, and she was curious. And what had the delegates been doing behind closed doors? She reportedly called out, "What have we got, a republic or a monarchy?" And his response was, "A republic if you can keep it." You know, it's interesting. What have we got? What have we got in this new country? A republic or a monarchy? Those were the choices. Republic hadn't been done. This was new territory. And so, we modern Americans easily believe this misquote, right? Because some people think he said a democracy if you can keep it. Because the foundations of our Constitution aren't taught. It was a republic. People think it says democracy. They think we are a democracy. What a mistake. What a mistake that is.
And yet we hear it every time a congressman opens his mouth.
Right, right. We're a democracy only in the way that we elect representation,
right,
that builds the republic. And so it's kind of interesting that people just think that we're a democracy and that's it. That is not it. And so simple democracy is one of the greatest of evils. You get a crowd going, an emotionally ignorant crowd, you can do a lot of things that aren't right because the crowd wants it.
We see it every day.
Yeah. I hearken back to the witch trials. So same exact kind of thing. So even a signatory to the Declaration of Independence, Benjamin Rush, said that a simple democracy is one of the greatest evils. He said another signer agreed. Another signer of the Constitution agreed and said pure democracy cannot subsist long, nor be carried far into the Department of State. It is very subject to caprice and madness of popular rage. There is a thing called popular rage. Mm-hmm. Have you seen these groups out there? Mm-hmm. And so in a simple democracy, 51% can rule the other 49% all the time without question. Imagine what a bare or emotional majority can do in the wake of such an event, even like 9/11. Look at what we did, you know?
Yep.
We were, a majority of us were in favor of going to war with a country that didn't have anything to do with 9/11. Think about that. It can go very wrong. And so, the founders rejected the simple democracy. Did they mean they rejected self-governance? No, they did not. The founders had just fought this very, very bloody revolution, and they'd made a lot of personal sacrifices. And hence the song that Ray Charles was singing, right? Yeah. Self-interest, right? Mm-hmm. That he was singing about, and the absence of self. And they did it all, at least partly because they had no representation in Parliament. And so the principles of self-governance were so important to the founders. That's why they didn't want to list every single thing that we could do.
Right.
They only wanted to list the things the government was supposed to protect, right? But not everything that you could do. They believed in self-governance.
Well, that's why it specifically says, mm-hmm, if the Constitution doesn't say the government can do it,
right,
then they can't. And yes, those things are left up to the people.
Mm-hmm. And so I think it is so important to understand that the founders solved the problem of minority political interests and the small states. How could they be represented next to the big states? And the founders solved this problem by creating a constitution that combines democracy, self-governance, with federalism, states' rights, and republicanism, deliberation and compromise. And this is why we have a Senate, one state, one vote, and a House, one person, one vote. And this is why our government's divided into three equal co-branches, executive, legislative, and judicial. It's why we have a supermajority doing things like amend the Constitution. It's why we have presidential vetoes. It's why we have an electoral college. What is the left trying to destroy? The electoral college.
Yep.
They want to get their hands on that so bad. And so when the checks and balances in our Constitution are respected, then they enable us to, you know, accomplish the near impossible, be self-governing. But people today have a hard time with being self-governing. They want to turn and put they want to make themselves dependent to the government by putting the government in charge and making them a sort of a god and giving them leeway into their lives. Right? It's the biggest mistake we could make as a people.
Yeah. It is.
It is. We get all this freedom, and then what do? We want to give it back because we're not comfortable with the way everybody does things. So we want the government to come in and create more and more dependency.
Well, and we've also trusted that our Congress, mm-hmm, follows the Constitution.
They don't.
And they not at all.
No, they don't at all. And so we have a sincere problem with that. And then we also, what the government gets to do and what they don't get to do. Does everybody remember Kamala Harris standing there and basically wanting to do everything for you, mm-hmm, as a citizen and telling you that she was in charge of everything, your health care, your education, crime, the infrastructure, the common cold? She was going to make sure, standing there. And a lot of presidents, not just somebody running for president like Kamala, or any of the gang of theater actors that they have represented as the Democratic Party, but also on the Republican side too. And they'll tell you, you know, they're going to solve every problem you have. Even Trump's been guilty of that a little bit too. And so we have to make sure that we understand that this isn't their role. It's not up to them. It has nothing to do with them. And the Constitution doesn't grant the federal government such unlimited authority. And neither Congress nor the presidency nor the courts were created to exercise it. So the Constitution fashioned the federal government to address a limited number of activities contained in that document's enumerated powers. And the remainder were exclusively at the domain of the state and local government and private sector. And so the system of divided authority is called federalism. And this was by Rob Nadelson. And as he explained, all these newly published documents from America's founding offer a lot of insight into how federalism was supposed to work. When the proposed Constitution became public, September 17th, 1787, Americans could see that the list of powers the Constitution granted the federal government was a generous one, and it encompassed nearly the entire scope of national defense and foreign affairs. It embraced certain key economic functions, such as patents, copyrights, and trade flowing, across the political borders. It also included authority in certain cases to prevent states from abusing their own citizens. So the list also included authority to hold the Union together. Now, the framers recognized that there were problems, and they weren't problems that the federal government could or should solve. That is huge. They recognized that there were problems, but they didn't want the federal government solving them. That is why they left most of the areas of life to exclusive responsibility of state, local governments, and private sector. So despite the Constitution's federal structure, many in the founding generation didn't think it limited the central government sufficiently, and they wanted to be able to govern themselves in their own states and local communities. They didn't want Congress or federal judges or officials imposing uniform policies on the entire country. This is also why the Supreme Court has never been given the ability to create a federal law. They can only render in an opinion of the Supreme Court. There is no such thing as rendering a federal law from the Supreme Court like that. So the members of the founding generation had good reasons for fearing all the centralized power, because it was in their history. It's in every history of every group of people under the same kind of tutelage. So concentrated power usually grows into oligarchy, dictatorship. And they questioned whether Congress could have the information or judgment necessary to tailor all those laws for every nook and cranny of the nation. They knew they couldn't do it, and they didn't want them to. And they recognized that when the government remained local, citizens had more say in how it was run. And if somebody was severely disaffected with state policies, he could also move to a different state. If you don't like it, you can leave. Yeah, that. They were actually okay with that, because then the states had the freedom to be governed by the people, right? Decide the things they wanted to decide. Be right back on the Kate Daly Show.
Balance of Nature.
Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Purple mountain, America, America. Well, God shed his grace on thee.
Welcome back, Kate Daly Show. It's Ray Charles. Definitely up in years, singing America the Beautiful. That was almost our anthem. There was a big fight over that, because the anthem that we have represented war a little too much, and they wanted this one that represented the lands, what America looked like, and the beauty, and representing all the different areas of America. So And now we know which one won that debate, but this almost was our anthem. Welcome back to the show. I've got Uncle Melty with me. And we were just talking about the Constitution, because I was just saying how the founders didn't want the federal government. This is Constitution Day, by the way, if you're just joining us. The founders didn't want the feds to control everything with uniform policies. And so their vital safety valve was you could move if you didn't like that particular state into another state.
Yeah.
And without that, there was no practical way to vent anger, right, for somebody. And they might not agree with how a state was run, so they could move away. And so modern federal efforts to impose uniform solutions to everything on the entire nation, look how many people call for that. They want a uniform, every citizen subject across the land, making the federal government a dictatorship. They want that. And so that's what's, of course, behind today's more political toxic swampy swamp. But the perception that the Constitution endangered local self-government was a central reason why Americans, perhaps a majority, initially opposed it. And the Constitution's advocates knew that unless they reassured the dissenters, the public was never going to adopt it. So they promised that once the government was functioning, they would offer constitutional amendments to further limit central power. That was the deal of the day. They had just gotten away, fought a revolution, and now they wanted to limit central power.
Mm-hmm.
They honored the promise. The amendments were known as the Bill of Rights. The advocates of the Constitution also adopted another course of action that was kind of less known today, that's less known right now. And that is they gave speeches and they wrote articles explaining to the people how the Constitution limited federal power. And sensing the need to be very specific, they listed government functions that would be outside the federal sphere. These would be the exclusive province of state governments and the private sector. So the Constitution's advocates assured the public and reassured the public that if the central government passed laws exceeding its authority, then the courts would declare them unconstitutional. Gee, I don't see the courts doing that.
That's because we don't know. You know, Chris Ann often quotes things, say, out of the Tench Cox papers.
Yes.
One of the writers of these essays that we're talking
Pennsylvania.
About.
Mm-hmm.
And the Federalist Papers and the mm-hmm. Anti-Federalist
the
Papers.
The papers are central to understanding all this.
Because you really need mm-hmm. to put everything in context.
Right.
And those papers and essays are what do that.
Yeah. If I wrote a paper saying that I want dogs to be behind bars. Now, don't you want to know in context why I feel that way or
yeah.
what led to that or what was the reasoning behind that? And so sometimes we read what we read on the Constitution. We don't understand why it is that way or why they came to that. And so you've got to understand the why, right? And so the Constitution's advocates really wanted us to fight anybody, or especially the feds, exceeding the authority. And most of the advocates issuing these lists were lawyers, and they knew the courts would give great respect to representations about a law from the law's sponsors, of course. So some of the advocates who used the lists of non-federal powers, they remain famous. What do we have a musical? Hamilton, right? people don't realize what Hamilton really, you know, stood for in the day. James Madison, John Marshall, before he became Chief Justice. And then others are lesser known. Like you said, Tench Cox of Pennsylvania, Alexander Conti Hansen of Maryland, and James Iredell of North Carolina. And so Cox may have been the most widely read, probably among the whole general public, and he was a Philadelphia businessman. He served in the Confederation Congress 1789, later served as our very first Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. And most of Cox's essays really have been available. They're available for free online, but until recently, four were hidden from all but constitutional scholars, and of those four finally were republished actually earlier this year, Tench Cox. So his essays itemize many of the activities over which the Constitution granted the federal government little or no jurisdiction. And among them were social services, care for the poor and health care, education, religion, real estate, local business, most roads and other infrastructure, and nearly all criminal law matters and most civil court cases. Let me reiterate that. The Constitution granted the federal government little or no jurisdiction over social services, the poor, health care, education, religion, real estate, local businesses, most of the roads, infrastructure, nearly all criminal law matters, and most civil court cases.
What could go wrong with the government having control over education?
Wow. Oh, man. I hearken to yesterday's conversation.
Yep.
So until the 1930s, the courts voided any measure exceeding the federal government's enumerated powers. And during the New Deal, this was what began to change. So much happened in those couple of decades. So although, and not for good either, although many believe that that change occurred because President Franklin Roosevelt threatened the Supreme Court, modern research suggests that there were other reasons. And in any event, the Constitution's plan for federalism stopped operating when Cox and other founders designed it. But reading Cox's essays really kind of enables us as a public now to recapture how federalism was supposed to work. They weren't supposed to have any jurisdiction over all the things that the candidates are promising on the stage.
That's right.
On both sides of the aisle, no jurisdiction. When our government says, well, we just need to do something about health care. No, we don't. We don't need to do something about health care.
It's not their job.
No, the people do, not, and the businesses, not the government. Yeah.
But you have to admit, you do want them telling you whether or not you can eat beef or not, don't you?
Yes.
Goodness gracious. Not only have they decided they have authority over these things, but they've decided they have the ultimate authority over these things.
Right, right. I was looking at an email, and it happened to be for Romney, because Romney's in the state that I'm in. And it was an email of all the things he was about to go do, right, and meet with. And it was everything from vaping experts to health care to education to certain religious groups to, I mean, the list was long. And I remember thinking, I wish we had a check mark, and I would check each one of them and send the email back, because it would say he's not allowed to do any of these things. None of these things are really under his purview. And we forget sometimes that as they're busybodies trying to get into everything and do everything, and they always start out the conversation this way. Because I was just listening to the Dana Show the other day, and the person started out that she was interviewing saying, well, we know that we need to do something. And we know that the people look to us to do something. That's the whole problem right there. In a nutshell, you don't have to do anything, and the people shouldn't be looking at you to do something. And a lot of people use that as the caveat and the big excuse. They want us to. Well, that's where public education needs to get better in understanding that we're not supposed to be asking these things. And then government should never step in, even if the people wanted them to. If they were a fantastic government body, they'd be saying, sorry, people, we can't do what you want us to do. We're not going to get involved.
Well, I wouldn't hold your breath for education to get better until we get rid of the U.S. Department of Education.
Yeah, absolutely. Reagan tried to get rid of it, and that, you know, he got a pretty big warning shot on that one, didn't he? So this brings me to talking about red flag, because I thought this was kind of interesting, and I wanted to pass this along and share this with you. And this comes by way of 10th Amendment Center. So the under pressure to do something, like I was just talking about mass killings, right? All these politicians want to do something. And Republicans and Democrats are endorsing red flag laws. These are so dangerous to our freedom. And this is what this law is what authorizes confiscation of firearms if a judge finds the owner that poses a risk to himself or others, and it's all based on hearsay. So the history of red flag laws should actually make politicians reconsider this. And modern red flag laws deny gun owners prior notice. They can't defend themselves against an initial confiscation order. The judge doesn't even meet with them. Nothing, just signs it. So the judge issues an order after an uncontested hearing. And so in some states, the person seeking the order is held to a relatively low burden of proof, just hearsay from a neighbor, friend, family member, right? So the disregard for due process would be wrong, even if red flag laws were proven effective. But the few studies on the subject are actually suggesting that they aren't. The one study even concludes that the measures may increase. Okay.
Yep.
In politics, we know if a proposal doesn't serve its advertised purpose, then the advertised purpose usually is not the real one. So in this case, the dominant motive seems to be to take away guns from people to keep us safe. Okay. But if you would listen to this, the real motive is not safety at all. And this is because the phrase red flag law in our history has been proverbial for the enactment masquerading as a safety measure, but really passed for really sinister reasons. So listen up. A lot of people think automobiles were invented around the turn of the last century, but a steam-driven car successfully navigated the streets of London as early as 1803, 100 years earlier, okay? Yep. A car powered by the internal combustion engine was designed in 1808, and by mid-century, steam autos appeared regularly on English roads. The new invention, it was called road locomotive, it posed this financial threat to all the entrenched special interests that were around. Railroads, horse-drawn carriage, all of these things, you know, buggy makers, farms who raised horses for sale, recognized that automobiles could, you know, reduce public demand for their products. Kind of funny, I'm thinking about electric cars, oil. Anyway, so instead of adapting to the market, the special interests lobbied politicians. Lobbied the government for laws protecting them from competition. And the advertised reason was automobile safety. Had nothing to do with safety. Everything to do with money.
Right.
Right?
I think that still happens today.
I think so, too. So beginning in 1861, the British Parliament, some American state legislators and cities imposed draconian restrictions on road locomotives. And they enacted absurdly low speed limits, such as 2 miles per hour in town and 4 miles per 4 miles per hour on the highway. As you're doing 80, just remember that. Another rule was that any person with a horse could force a car to stop for any reason or for no reason simply by raising their hand. A Pennsylvania bill that was vetoed by the governor would have required the owner of any automobile who encountered a horse or other livestock to dismantle his vehicle and conceal the parts in the bushes that were nearby. So the most famous enactment of the British Locomotive Act of 1865, among all these other regulations, it mandated that every car have a crew of at least three persons whom at least, so they, you know, this mandatory, you have to have this many people in the car to precede such locomotive on foot, not less than 60 yards, and shall carry a red flag constantly displayed, you know, like the gold star.
Yep. Yep.
A red flag. They wanted to have to show a red flag, and they had to warn the riders and drivers of horses of the approach of such locomotives, and then they had to signal the driver thereof when it shall be necessary to stop and shall assist horses and carriages drawn by horses. So the requirement that a crew member precede the car with a red flag gave the restrictive enactments their popular name, the Red Flag Law.
Yep.
So, unfortunately, the Red Flag Law stalled automobile progress for years because it conflicted with the industries at the time, right? They wanted their cake. And they were loosened in the 19th century, and then progress resumed. And this is why many think of cars as not being invented until the 19th or 20th centuries. It was actually stalled by Red Flag Laws, posing as safety, having nothing to do with safety, having everything to do with infringing on the rights of people to want to drive said road locomotives.
What an interesting concept.
Right? And so isn't that interesting? In fact, in 1904, John Scott Montague, a British MP, wrote a survey of automobile laws for the American Scholarly Journal, and he said this: the continual misdirected effort of the law to control vehicles, about which the lawmakers have had as a rule but shadowy and erroneous ideas, future generations will laugh at the illogical efforts their forefathers made to restrict the use of the automobile. And so he might as well have been describing red flag laws, the infringement of red flag laws on so many different rights, all in the name of safety.
Yeah.
Think twice when you hear a politician say, "I just want to do something. I just want to do something." Scariest words a politician could ever say. I just want
to. Isn't that the truth?
I know I have to do something about this. No, you don't have to do anything about this. We'll be right back on the Kate Daly Show. We'll take your calls, too. I'll be back with Uncle Milty in just a moment. Stay with us.
Have you been struggling with erectile dysfunction? Hi guys, it's Andrew with Wasatch Medical Clinic. There is now a breakthrough and long-lasting fix for erectile dysfunction that does not require medication, injections, or surgery. You heard that right, no more pills. This new treatment is called acoustic wave therapy. It utilizes an FDA-cleared device that is clinically proven to increase blood flow, exactly what you need more of if you have ED. With just a few short treatments in our clinic, you can eliminate erectile dysfunction completely. Call in the next 3 minutes and we'll give you the initial doctor's exam, assessment, and blood flow ultrasound totally free. That's a $300 value. Call now, 435-922-7000. That's 435-922-7000. If you have erectile dysfunction and you're sick of the pills, call Wasatch Medical Clinic right now for that free assessment. 435-922-7000.
93.1 FM, 1450 AM, KZNU St. George, 93.1 FM, Cedar City, KAZZ Parowan, KCLS HD4 Leeds.